My demons are begging me to open up my mouth. I need them, mechanically make the words come out. They fight me, vigorous and angry, watch them pounce. Ignite me, looking at the flames they bring up.
They miscalculated. A lot. The Alaska base, quaintly codenamed Iceberg by someone with a very two-dimensional sense of humor, is a lot bigger than they thought. Didn't she make a joke about this place's basement only a couple of weeks ago? Shit. Hey! Iron Man pants over comms. Turns out that guy's sense of humor was maybe slyer than I was giving him credit for. Shut up and limp, the Winter Soldier orders, tracking her progress through the scope of his rifle. Almost. 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 The plan is, well, maybe not simple, but it's one where Iron Man doesn't have to kill a whole lot. At least not in cold blood. It bothers her. It doesn't bother the Winter Soldier. So he quietly and covertly shifted around their plan, until it consisted of her busting in, drawing fire and attention, and then pretending to lame getting out. Making everyone chase her into the open, where he can pick them off, one by one, sniper precision. He is perched on a small slope just beyond the tree line, enough of a vantage point to fire from, but hidden enough to make the shots tricky. His specialty. So far, so good. But then Iron Man crashed through a few walls, through a round of server or two, and instead of six guards, there were suddenly 24 streaming out of an access point that was not on any plans or surveillance. Iceberg! She cursed, as she used 2 miniature rockets to blast a way out. Jarvis calmly noted 3 dead, and Iron Man kept repeating, a motherfucking iceberg! You only see the tip. Goddamn, I hate this shit. Spies and goddamn secret agents. How do you even... She killed 7 on her way out. Voice going shaky in places. Language fouler and fouler. He's proud of her, of how she held up. Is holding up. Still sticking to the plan. It's not working as well as it should, of course. There's too many security personnel for all of them to come chasing after her. But of the 29 life signs remaining, 8 do give chase. The Winter Soldier puts down the unsmoked cigarette he's been chewing on for 30 minutes, keeps breathing normally, and marks his path through the hostiles. The ones in the back first, then towards the front. Make their way to safety as long as possible. If they fall over their comrades, try to take them with, even better. It'll slow them down. Iron Man is a stark red and gold blur as she hobbles and hops along with small repulsor blasts, pretending to be damaged by a few bullets. The indignity of it made her rant for 20 minutes on their drive up. He listens to her mutter and sweat for a moment longer, then pulls the trigger. The shot cuts the icy air like a knife. The impact is a dull smack. More red. 1 down. Breathe normally. Sight. Fire. Breathe normally. Sight. Fire. Breathe normally. Sight. Fire. 7 of them are down by the time Iron Man reaches the tree line, and the chase becomes obsolete. The last hunter hunkered down in the snow, trying to track the sniper. He has good eyes, sighting something where the Winter Soldier hides, taking aim. He never fires. Iron Man barrels into him hard enough to break his neck on impact and leaves him fallen in the snow. It's a familiar sight, broken bodies on a mother's lawn at dawn, blood in Russian snow. Red, white, Still forests and wolves howling as he runs at them. Memory. He missed it so badly when it was gone. He pushes it down. Thatcher keeps telling him he'll survive. Now what? Iron Man asks, panting, pointedly not looking at the man she killed. And there is no way he is not dead. The voice tracks life signs, and she would not leave the man alive. We need to clear the place out before they find a way around Jarvis and call for help. Plan? She lets him lead in this. Defers to his expertise in murdering people. He will survive this. He smirks, slinging his rifle over his back and making his way around and down to his partner. That is the plan. They both think best on their feet. She salutes with the wrong hand, grin audible in her voice as she answers. I like how you think. Let me get the door for you. And then she's off, back inside through the hole she blew. Gunfire immediately starts up again, and she returns fire even as he catches up, using the distraction she provides to slip inside and break a man's neck. He catches his gun as it drops, shoots another 2 point blank. By then, the enemy catches on that there are 2 fighters in the fray now, adjusts cover and strategy. He ducks behind and around a desk, uses the butt of the stolen weapon to cave someone's temple in, and then pauses. Iron Man is standing in the center of what was once an office, deadly still. The agents have stopped firing on her, realizing it's a waste of bullets. Slowly, she raises her arms, a whine of machinery announcing a counterattack. Exterminators here, she chirps, maniacally chipper, and fires on a bank of overturned desks, causing several people to give up their hiding places in favor of not being blown up. The Winter Soldier picks off 5 of them, gets grappled to the ground by a 6th and 7th, while Iron Man wades into another fight, punching hard enough to break bones and make people go still. Silent. He isn't sure if she's aware that her punches kill, but then she's Tasha underneath, the most brilliant person he has ever, to his knowledge, met. She knows. It saddens him to see her like that. So deadly, so ruthless, but at the same time, it's beautiful. She is beautiful, dangerous and deadly. A weapon she built herself, powered by her own heart. Violence looks good on Tasha, and he's not ashamed to admit he likes her this way. It's not a nice thing, perhaps, but then he's not a nice person. He kicks one of his attackers in the knee, making him loosen his grip enough to slip backwards and haul the metal arm back for a punch that breaks a nose and drives bone into the brain. The other one gets his gun up, and he ducks, slips around and breaks his neck before picking up a new gun, sliding his rifle back into place and checking on Iron Man with a single glance. She's still punching out opponents, heading for the doorway they poured out of. He follows, gun ready, as they head down the hallway toward the elevator that's not on any blueprint they could find. It's open, but locked down, of course. Tasha flies inside, aims her palm repulsors down, and fires until the flooring turns to slag. Then she gallantly offers him an arm. May I escort you down? Are you flirting with me? He asks, idly, even as he accepts the offer and swings himself around to half-ride her back. She takes them down the elevator shaft at least 50 feet, then stops in front of the only other set of doors. They have no idea what lies behind there. The security up top might have been most of it. Or it might have been a fraction. Is it working? She returns. Left or right? Left, he decides. Braces his feet against the middle of the suit's thigh. Gets ready to leap, trusting her to compensate. It is to the left, she intones nonsensically. Remember, we need someone alive, okay? Then she pries open the doors and shoots upwards towards the ceiling, where most people won't aim. The soldier takes in the lay of the land with a single glance. 7 men, clustered around the doors, badly covered. A hallway leading in either direction and straight ahead. He ducks, rolls, kicks the legs out from under his first opponent, breaks his neck as he comes down with barely a flick of his wrist. He really, really loves his new arm. Tasha has lost all compunction about killing at this point, encountering too much resistance to consider mercy. He saw, late at night, when she was sleeping for once, the satellite footage of what she did to a hillside in Afghanistan. Of what she left there, once her revenge was done. The voice showed him, quiet and challenging. Showed him images of Syria, too. Tasha Stark might not like killing, but she is awfully good at it, provided she has reason. Weapons are what I do, babe, she told him once in the beginning. And he answered, I know, because he did. He knew no other reason, then, why she would keep him. She blasts and punches her way through. Hallway too narrow to take flight or use her legs much. He kills at close range, too, making use of the garrote wire hidden in his forearm a few times. They're trying to decide which way to go, when Jarvis finally pipes up again.
I have found the pertinent information. Apologies for missing it before. It seems purposefully misfiled. If you head down your right, you should find the main labs. I have taken the liberty of hacking the surveillance. It appears 8 individuals have sought refuge there. To your right are storage facilities and sleeping quarters. Initial scans of the extended personnel show that they, too, were all picked by Agent Williams. Many of them have spent extended periods stationed in Europe.
This part, he thinks, is solely for Tasha. For her peace of mind. And, perhaps, for the voice's own. He is his mother's son, after all.
Agent Williams seems to be headed your way, by the way. He is heavily armed and has 3 men with him. I suggest preventative action.
Buddy of mine, we kind of need him alive. Anything tank-busting?
Possibly.
She grins. He can hear it. Then that's my stop. You want the labs? Yes, he tells her. If only so she doesn't have to. Takes off at a brisk jog. Hey, she calls after him. You still haven't answered. Is it working? I don't put out on the second mission. He mutters, as he crouches, peeks around a corner carefully. She laughs, even as he hears her engines go overtime. You have adjusted to this century beautifully. Puts a tear in my eye. I had a good teacher, he admits, rolling out of cover and disabling the grenade someone booby-trapped with paperclips and rubber bands. Scientists. Really? Now who's flirting? I meant Jarvis.
Thank you, sir.
Ugh, you break my heart. He explains things to me, he argues. Kicks in a door. Hey, I explain things and build you things and... A brief silence as something blows up, shaking half the complex. They definitely have tank busters. Ow, you fucker! That stung! And I take you places. Take that, you grenade-launching asshole. I took you to the park. And also, you're calling Jarvis he now. Oh, God, put that grenade down, you fucker. Shit, my paint job. Oh, buddy, now I'm pissed with you. You just tried to pry my face off. Who does that? This is awesome. One of the scientists is armed with a weapon. Another has a blowtorch in hand. The soldier stops, raises one hand, placating. Hail Hydra, he announces, disgust curling his lip behind his mask. The whole gaggle of them visibly relaxes. They get a bullet each, and he makes it back outside in time to see Tasha. And she is Tasha now. There is nothing Iron Man about her anymore. Not now that she's found her equilibrium in the middle of this madness. Ride Agent Williams to the ground with both hands around his neck, swearing up a storm at him. Since her external speakers are turned off, only James can hear. To everyone else, she is an eerily silent robot, killing them one by one. He can't stand silence during battle. Even before, he needed the chatter with the other commandos to distract him, just a little from what he was doing. Killing. When he was the Winter Soldier all the time, a blank slate to fill, he didn't know how to banter, didn't have anyone to do it with. He was silent for days, weeks, sometimes months when the mission was long. But even if that's the moniker he uses now, he is not that weapon anymore. He just thought of himself as James, didn't he? It feels fitting. Old and new. His. Williams gives them several terabytes worth of information. Not voluntarily, but he does give it to them. In return, they do not make him watch as they blow his base to Kingdom Come with a whole lot of C4 and Jarvis on the trigger. Tasha flies them back to the car, adrenaline wearing off in both of them, leaving them tired, hollowed and hurt. He's got two bullet grazes on his arm and thigh, and a cut along his forearm. She's bruised and battered to hell, according to her AI, shaken by the missile she took in the gut. He thanks a god he doesn't believe in that the suit held up, and when some of the plating sticks as he tries to fold it back into its case, he helps pry it open for her. Only to have her collapse into his arms, white as a ghost, clutching her chest and breathing hard. He inhales, smells the by now familiar stink of a palladium piece used up and fried. Tell me you brought a replacement, he orders, sitting her down in the open trunk, already scrabbling for the first aid kit they brought. They need to get out of here, but they need her to not die more. So, screw it. They're 30 miles off-site and it'll take S.H.I.E.L.D. at least half an hour to get here. Middle of fucking nowhere, he hopes. So far, their intel has been a little bit shit. Where is it? She waves at him, at the kit. Little box. Red. She gasps, shudders, farther gone than he's ever seen her. He wonders how long she's been holding the pain in. It must have started during the fight. He didn't notice. He finds the box, moves to help her take off her shirt, only to find her curling into herself, muscles cramping. He has no idea what's hurting her right now. The poisoning that's been slowly turning her skin into a roadmap of doom, or the reactor giving out, letting the shrapnel in her chest have free rein. He wonders if it'll matter, in the end, which one kills her. With or without, she's dead. Tasha, I need you to let me at your chest, he tells her, voice calm. He's always calm under pressure, even when he wants to scream. Through clenched teeth, she hisses. Easier said than done. The next second, she lurches forward. He barely manages to catch her before she falls out of the car. Can't do anything but hold her hair while she throws up. The poisoning, then. By the time she's done retching, her breaths are shallow and weak, and she's shaking all over, more gray than white. He has to lean her against the car to get her to stay upright, and doesn't bother with finesse, rips her clothes down the middle. Her breath hitches, eyes going dark with some ugly memory, some horror that makes her wake screaming, frantically searching for the light that keeps her alive. The same horror that made her gasp for breath when Fury leaned over her, his bulk against her seated form. She didn't react this way the last time he had to rip her clothes off her to get at the reactor, but then she was a lot more aware then. She bats at his hands, his shoulders and arms, anything she can reach, tries to fight him off while she can barely stay upright. So he starts talking to her, letting random sentences fall from his lips, the strange jumble of languages, until she stops struggling and, with a sound like a wounded animal, gives in. Or simply can't find the energy to fight him anymore. He fumbles with the reactor, messes up the twist turn of unhooking it, takes off his glove, tries again. Finally, he gets it loose and manages to switch the palladium core for a new one, plugs it back in, and waits. Waits for her to regain color, to breathe steadily, to not die for just one more day. Jesus, she rasps, after too long of nothing, her voice barely more than a reedy whisper. Let's not do that again. Can you stand? She tries. Flops into his arms like a limp fish. He catches her, cradles her in one arm, and carefully folds her into the back seat, putting his jacket over her as she starts shivering. Then he packs up their gear and gets in the driver's seat, fights to not crack the wheel with his left hand. Hates her a little for making him care. Hates her more for not caring herself, for not telling him for so long, hiding it again during the battle. The battle. The suit is attached to her reactor. Did the fight cause this? Did she burn through the palladium faster because of his vendetta? He doesn't know, and she'll lie if he asks her. Because she's a goddamn martyr and doesn't even know it. Just thinks she isn't worth the trouble, the worry. Thinks she doesn't matter. Thinks... After a mile, she's asleep. After 10... She's a tiny ball of misery in the rearview mirror. After 20, her hand reaches around his seat, grabs onto his shirt, digs into the skin of his waist, holds on. Thank you, she whispers. She's asleep again by 35. Once more, Iron Man has attacked S.H.I.E.L.D. Once more, Steve stands in the ruins of what she left. Burnt earth and a hole in the ground. When he asked what used to fill that hole, all he got was hunched shoulders and shifty eyes. Top secret. Level 9 clearance. How are we supposed to figure out what Iron Man wants if we don't know what she's after? He asked. Captain, your mission is to find and take care of her, not to understand her. Beside him, between the rows and rows of body bags, Trevor's whistles irreverently. Damn, that's a lot of dead people for one attacker. 2. Chance corrects, crouched a dozen feet away, on the disturbed ground. Red, brown, white. Blood, dirt. Snow. Steve swallows the memories down. Without prompting, Chance points out what she found. They laid a trap Iron Man is bait. Here's footprints, melted snow. Probably limped along, pretending injury. And somewhere back there, she points toward the tree line, northern edge, was a sniper waiting to pick off anyone that followed her. Brock hisses in annoyance. Let's find the nest, he orders. Mickey, Rollins, go. Anyone else? Start separating those kills. We need to know how our new player moves. Steve has absolutely no desire to dig through body bags to see everything Howard's daughter has done, what she has turned her father's legacy into. He slings his shield onto his back and turns to the team leader. I'm heading out too. I'd find something. Knowing better than to let Brock start arguing, he simply takes off at a jog toward the trees, starts working his way around the clearing while the rest of the strike team examines the dead. There are a lot of places to choose from for a sniper. The trees are big, sturdy, good for climbing. Attach yourself to the trunk and you could spend days up there. But the angles aren't right. The bullet didn't come from high up, but hit almost level. Lower than most snipers prefer. But also a spot most trained soldiers wouldn't look for a sniper in. It was Bucky's favorite trick. While the German shot into the trees, he was on the ground, invisible because they didn't even consider that he might be so low. It made his shots trickier, but he liked the challenge. Steve stops for a moment, head tilted, trying to decide where Bucky would have gone. It might be a bust, but it might also not be. From the sounds of it, neither Trevor's nor Rollins have had any luck so far. You can hear them muttering a few hundred yards away. The land is mostly flat around here. Not a lot in the way of natural hills, but there are a few mounds of accumulated forest debris. A few rocks. Someone could... There. Picking up his pace, Steve makes his way to a small rise in the topography. It might have been a fallen tree once, covered in decomposing leaves and soil for decades, slowly turning into an incline. At the very top, the snow is brushed clean, like someone dragged a branch over it to erase traces. But Steve has good eyes, and he can make out the small holes where the tripod's legs dug through the snow cover into the frozen earth below. That, and there's an unsmoked cigarette rolled to one side, stuck under a few leaves. He picks it up, studies it. The filter is deformed and discolored, like someone chewed on it. Bucky used to do that. Couldn't smoke in the nest, but for him, smoking was always as much something to do as the rush. So if he couldn't have one, he could have the other. He chewed smokes until he got tobacco stuck between his teeth, and Steve almost buckles under the memories. The snow. The cold. The dead. The small rise, the tripod, the brush, the cigarette. Bucky, Bucky, Bucky. But Bucky is dead. Has been dead for far longer than he was ever alive. But then, who is copying his signature? Steve tries to swallow down the desperate, wild hope that blooms in his chest, the same way he swallows the memories day after day. In his clenched fist, the cigarette falls to pieces. It doesn't work. You know I'm not dead yet, right? Tasha asks, tongue in cheek. Winter grunts and keeps moving, steadily down the hallway. They've already made pit stops in the kitchen for some necessary chow, and the bathroom, where he stripped them both and then more or less hosed them down. He washed her hair. If he hadn't looked so damn blank the whole time, it would have been funny. Well, that and the part where her hair kept getting caught in the seams of his arm. And now he is carrying her upstairs to Howard's shrine. She's getting used to being lugged around bridal style. That's bad news. But since she's not sure she could make the stairs on her own at the moment, well, she doesn't think she'll survive this. His expression turns impossibly darker at her quip, then clears into a smirk. He smirks now. It's a thing. She's so fucking proud of him. You sure? You smelled like it earlier. I'm all clean now. You should know. You did the scrubbing. With her pink loofah. He keeps up the happy face for a moment longer, before turning the last corner and quietly offering, "It's reached past your shoulders." The black, he means. The poison. Tasha grins, all her teeth on display, and reaches out, opens the door automatically as he stops, and then ducking her head into his shoulder. Getting way too used to this. He puts her down on the mattress of lazy evenings, gently. He is so gentle with her. She shuffles until she's sitting against a display case, pulls the blanket over her lap, and fishes a tablet out from below the edges of the mattress. Winter watches her until he's satisfied she's not going to keel over, then wanders off toward the corner with the sheet-covered stuff. While he's poking around, Tasha fiddles idly, not really awake enough to get any work done. Besides, she's almost finished with the list. Not much left to do now. Laying down, she watches Winter pull a few model boards away from the wall and place them flat on the floor, studying them. It's a scale model of the last Stark Expo. Pretty, huh? My old man missed my 5th birthday for that. And all of her others for other reasons. But it's not like she's bitter or anything. Neat, he decides after a moment. But Howard always did have an eye for design. With a grunt, Tasha rolls to her feet, weaves over, and leans into her bodyguard's side to look at her father's legacy. It is neat. A central stage, with pavilions placed in a symmetrical pattern all around it, rides and attractions in between. Even the concession stands follow a pattern. As a matter of fact, it almost looks like... Well, fuck me! She blurts, dropping to her knees right by the boards. Winter makes a move to catch her until he realizes it's intentional. Then he comes down right beside her. What's going on, Tasha? That's... It can't be. Oh, but that crafty old goat... I can't believe this. Help me get those down to the lab. What? Why? Another change. He doesn't follow orders blindly anymore. Just help me, one arm. Jarvis, scan and on the big hollow. Blow it up. Blow it up big. A moment later, Tasha stands in front of a model board, surrounded by a sphere of blue light that looks... Oh, you long-dead son of a bitch! She snarls, holding onto a table to keep from keeling over. Jarvis, run the usual sims. I swear, if the old goat were dead, I'd kiss him. Maybe kill him, but definitely kiss him first. This is the best thing since vodka ice cream and AIs and threesomes with Swedish supermodels, and I never thought I'd say this with an irony like, whoa, but thank you, old man. You are a brilliant fucker, and I adore you right now. It'll pass, no doubt, but right now? She takes a deep breath. Thank you, Dad. Through the blue shimmer of hope, Winter looks on, amused, confused, and terribly fond. What is it? It's an element, and not one I've ever seen before. Something new. Something you haven't tried with the reactor yet? She smiles at him, real and bright and painless, the way she hasn't in far too long. Smart cookie, she praises. And then he steps through the blue and hauls her in by the shoulders, wrapping his arms around her and squeezing. She can feel his breath against her neck, his hair tickling her ear, can feel him warm and solid and close, holding on with sheer relief. They don't even know if this is viable yet, don't know if it'll work, but he's holding on to her like he wants to never let go. Oh. Oh. Silly, silly, imprinted duckling tiger. I called myself James today, he tells her, suddenly, speaking into the skin of her neck. What? I called myself James. It's my name. It feels like my name. Now. Again. She finally wraps her arms around him, buries her fingers in his thick hair. Does that mean I can call you Jamie, baby? That makes him draw back, a grimace on his face. Ugh, if you must. He sighs, terribly put upon, and Tasha thinks, again, oh, because she's obviously not firing on all cylinders, and there's an element her father hid in plain sight, and a man who, last she checked, considered himself an it, reclaiming a name he lost decades ago, and, oh, God, he's a dumb fucking duckling, and so is she, because she imprinted right back at him. So she does what Tasha Stark must always do. She scrapes together the remains of herself, pulls him in by his hair, and leaps. Kisses him. It feels like the truest thing she's done in a long time. He sighs her name. Then he kisses her back. This is what I live for. Selfish. Taking what I want and calling mine. I'm helpless. Clinging to a little bit of spine. They rush me. Telling me I'm running out of time. They shush me. Walking me across a flat.